Zero emission passenger rail and trail project mile two engagement and California Public Utilities Commission coordination efforts update. Hi.
Hello and good morning. Actually, good afternoon. Riley Gerbrandt of your staff. Thank you, Chair Brown and commissioners, for the opportunity to present to you today on an update for the zero emission passenger rail and trail project. And I've got Mark McLaren and Tiffany Mendoza, part of the consultant team, on the line as well. So they will be providing some portion of this update for the commission. I'm going to attempt to share the screen. So we'll give that a try. And if you guys can see the screen, let me know. I want to make sure that you're able to see it. Looks like from the camera, actually, it looks like you guys can see it. So I will continue. So today is as I mentioned, an update. It's going to be an update on the Project Milestone 2 engagement, as well as an update for the Commission on the California Public Utilities Commission coordination efforts. We do not have a recommended action. This is a presentation with an update on the status of the project. As a reminder of this project is new high capacity rail.
Riley, I'm sorry to interrupt. We lost your slides.
Yeah, they were showing, and then they weren't. And just a real quick IT update. In order to address the echo on Zoom, I have to mute the room. And so when the speaker on Zoom is speaking, then our mics will go on mute. So apologize for that.
Understood. So let's see, I will stop the share and share again. Maybe I'll share the screen and have it on there. We'll try it this way so I don't potentially click off of it. So as a reminder, the project is looking to implement high capacity passenger rail. That is zero emission passenger rail on 22 miles of the branch line, as well as complete segments 13 through 20 of the MVSST Coastal Rail Trail and phase two of segment 11. So that would add additional 12 miles of Coastal Rail Trail to the system. I wanted in this first slide here to note that there were several comments received on this item. There one particular comment voiced that the project includes public participation. Public comments be made available for public viewing online in order to ensure transparency. We have already addressed this issue. Luckily, or as part of the plan for the project, we have making the public comments available as part of the process, and we have the Milestone 1 and Milestone 2 public outreach summaries, which provide a very detailed summary of what occurred in each of those milestones, is publicly available on the RTC's website. So let's see. Looks like you guys still see the slide, so that's great. So as a reminder, this is our project schedule. In October 2023, we kicked off this project to begin the project concept report, which will define, evaluate, and develop a project rail and trail build concept that could be advanced into future projects. And this is scheduled to be completed in spring 2025. And following completion of the project concept report, the commission will have an opportunity to move the project forward into preliminary engineering and environmental documentation. And then if there's project approval, then through final design and right of way. And on this slide, we have a summary of recent commission actions. In February of this year, we had a public hearing and presented the project's preliminary purpose and need statement. And in April, the commission adopted loading guidelines for railroad bridges, repairs and replacements. In May of this year, the commission adopted design standards for the cross sections for preferred, constrained, and unconstrained scenarios for the rail and trail facilities. and also adopted recommended horizontal setback guidelines from the branch line right away for new structure. And in June, the commission held a public hearing on the initial conceptual alignment and the analysis of conceptual rail transit vehicle types. And that brings us to milestone two, engagement summary. Before we get into the summary of that provided by Tiffany Mendoza of our team, I wanted to mention, as I did earlier, attachment one for the staff report for this item includes the detailed summary of this engagement process that is available through as an attachment to the staff report and also available online at the RTC's website. So I'll hand it over to Tiffany.
Yeah, thank you, Riley. Again, everyone, thanks for having me. My name is Tiffany Mendoza. As Riley mentioned, I am with HDR and I'm supporting your staff on the community engagement efforts for this project. Our outreach for Milestone 2 was conducted in June and July. As Riley mentioned, that began with the public hearing at the June Commission. We also held two in-person open houses, as well as an interactive online open house, and conducted briefings and presentations with approximately a dozen agencies, committees, and other stakeholders. Across all of those outreach efforts, we had more than 120 participants at the two in-person meetings, which were held in Watsonville and Santa Cruz. And more than 1,200 users participated in the online open house. From those, we received a total of more than 650 comments and feedback points from the public. And that included more than 400 comments just on the initial conceptual alignment maps alone. And I did want to mention that the online open house that was launched in June, it remains open and available online, and that's at the www.zuppert.com address. All of the information that was provided and maps are still available. However, we have closed the feedback options while the project team works through the comments and next steps. Riley, if you want to go to the next slide. All right, I'm going to share some of the key feedback we heard. As we mentioned, milestone two focused on sharing information and collecting feedback on two key topic areas. Those included analysis of potential rail transit vehicle types and the initial conceptual alignment. So I'm going to detail the key takeaways we heard from both of these, starting with the rail vehicle types. Before I jump into that, as Riley mentioned, we do have the full summary of all of the feedback received attached to the staff report today, as well as on the project website on RTC's site. So getting into the key takeaways we heard on the vehicle types, we heard from the community a preference for multiple unit vehicles, followed by light rail vehicles. And the third vehicle type that we presented was locomotive hauled vehicles, which definitely had less preference from the community. As part of that preference, we did hear from the community that they're very interested in a vehicle that is efficient, reliable, and quiet, as well as a vehicle that provides flexibility. And when we say flexibility, we're referring to flexibility with connections to other systems, flexibility to interact with freight service, as well as to accommodate growing capacity. We also had a strong community preference that the vehicle type be consistent with flexibility for and eligibility for state and federal funding opportunities. Next slide. All right, next I'm gonna share the key feedback we heard related to the initial conceptual alignment. We received a lot of specific feedback on the trail alignment and configuration. This included a desire to keep the trail as close to the branch line corridor as possible, as well as concerns about the trail width. We also heard an interest in trail connections, both from the rail system as well as the community. We heard from the community the need to ensure maximum funding opportunities. And we also received a lot of feedback regarding station locations and connection to the statewide rail system. In relation to those station locations, we saw a desire from the community for both the Santa Cruz and Watsonville stations to be located in close proximity to downtown districts. In Watsonville, we also heard a desire for connections to existing and planned local trail networks, as well as to South County area beaches. And lastly, we also heard a lot of general feedback from the community related to grade crossings, safety, and noise impacts, as well as a lot of site-specific community concerns and suggestions that our project team has been working through. And Riley's going to go into a bit more detail on a few of these items. So I'll hand it back to Riley.
Thank you, Tiffany. And on your screen here, you'll notice that there are a couple items that are have asterisks, and we're going to go into some detail on those specific items because they came up as important items through the public engagement and stakeholder and partner agency work. So first is maximizing eligibility for state and federal funds. This was a common theme for what we heard through engagement milestone number two. The community, the stakeholders, the partner agencies are very interested in making sure that we have maximum ability, maximize our ability to maintain eligibility with funding sources out there. And on that note, we wanted to give a little bit of a briefing on what those funding options currently are, kind of the landscape of funding, both state and federally, currently for rail transit. And the biggest item is that current and state and federal funding is weighted heavily towards developing new or improved intercity rail passenger rail services. Both the state rail plan and the Federal Department of Transportation priorities, they align with that goal to provide new and improve expanded intercity rail. One of the bigger programs in this space is the Federal Corridor ID program, or the Corridor Identification and Development program, which was authorized by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And the Federal Railroad Administration, or the FRA, has delegated the authority to administer the Corridor ID program, which is, in a nutshell, intended to develop sustained comprehensive intercity passenger rail planning and development for the United States. And that program, as one of the key concepts, is to set forth capital project pipelines that are ready for federal funding. And this is going to be the primary means for directing federal financial support and technical assistance toward the development of new and improved intercity passenger rail throughout the United States. And as a note, only intercity passenger rail is eligible for this program. And the state rail plan aligns with the Corridor ID program policies and goals. The Caltrans is a sponsor of the Corridor ID program for California corridors in the program. And the Central Coast Corridor, which includes the extension to Santa Cruz on the Santa Cruz Branch Rail Line, is part of one of these five corridors. As mentioned in Director Weiss's director's report, staff continue to coordinate closely with Caltrans, including on this project. And on this note, Caltrans has offered to, on a future date, provide a detailed presentation to the commission on the Corridor ID program. And staff is working with Caltrans to schedule a date for this presentation. But in a nutshell, I can summarize really briefly. It's the Corridor ID program for the FRA is a three-step process. Caltrans is currently in step one to define the scope, schedule, and budget for a service development plan. Sometime in early 2025, Caltrans will move into step two, which is developing that service development plan. And moving into that next step includes approval with the FRA on an approved scope for the corridor and the corridor projects. And that would be the time for, the commission, for instance, to be either in or out, to express support for being in the program or for developing something outside that program. Step three of the program, the Corridor ID program, would be going into preliminary engineering in NEPA, and FRA would provide 80% of funding for those step three projects. And once in the program, then you do not need to reapply for steps two or three. It's not a competitive program once accepted into the program. And it's, again, it's the primary method for FRA bringing funds to these projects. So aligning the Branch Line Passenger Rail Service Plan with the state rail plan and with the federal transportation priorities would, in a nutshell, maximize funding eligibility and technical support through state and federal programs. And that was a big key takeaway from the Milestone 2 engagement. Moving on to another key takeaway is on the screen here is the Santa Cruz and Watsonville proximity to the downtown districts. The partner agency, and during the partner agency briefings, we met with both the city of Watsonville and the city of Santa Cruz, expressed the importance of optimizing locations of the planned stations for passenger rail service, particularly near the downtown locations, and the desire to locate them at the historic depots was expressed, and this was consistent with public engagement as well. Locating the stations within walkable distance to the downtown district would obviously provide more accessibility and equitable transportation and would accommodate planned future growth. Locating the downtown stations will be at the historic depots is being analyzed in ridership and operations modeling as we continue to develop and refine the conceptual alternative alignment. Both of these locations have operational challenges and specific site challenges that the project team is currently assessing in more detail. In a nutshell, being on the north leg of the Y, downtown Santa Cruz, for instance, makes an operational challenge for vehicles that would have to come in and then reverse direction. And in Watsonville at the historic depot location, that is located on a curve. Locating a station on a curved portion of the track would be incompatible with level boarding systems, which creates an operational challenge and is not consistent with the Milestone 1 purpose and need statement that was developed. Options for avoiding, mitigating, and minimizing these challenges are being investigated by the project team, and we will continue to engage with city staff as well as during Milestone 3 engagement with the public and stakeholders on the location of the stations for the entire railing, but specifically as well for the ones near downtown. And the third key takeaway are the connections to South County beaches and local trail networks. So consistently, that was a big theme that came through the Milestone 2 engagement process. Many comments we received with particular support for a multi-use trail along West Beach Street to provide connections to existing and planned trail networks, as well as to for access to South County beaches. In response to this, the project team developed a conceptual alternative exhibit, which is there's a link in the staff report to those exhibits. They're hosted on the RTC's website. They were too large of files to include as attachments to the staff report. But in a nutshell, three conceptual alternatives with conceptual cross-sections are shown in this exhibit. And for each alternative, segment 18 would provide a West Beach Street alignment that connects to the Coastal Rail Trail site, segment 17B. The three alternatives presented differ on where segment 18 connects back to the rail corridor. The three alternatives shown are being connections at the Lee Road, at Ohlone Parkway, and at Walker Street. City and county staff we engaged with during Milestone 2 supported developing these exhibits as a means to further review and assess these potential alternatives, and staff plan to seek input from both the county and the city on these conceptual alignment alternatives. The input received will be incorporated into development of the revised conceptual alignment that will comprise the key component of the Milestone 3 engagement materials. Staff would also like to highlight that several public comments on this staff report and on the subsequent one were made relating to these exhibits and the alternatives presented for segment 18 alignments. Staff and the project team are currently reviewing these comments, and we'll be reviewing how we can incorporate those comments and respond to them in the development of the refined conceptual alignment. And options for delivering the segment 18 rail trail segment, including these alternative alignments, will be discussed in more detail in item 30 of today's agenda. And that wraps up summary on milestone 2, public engagement. And that brings us into the second theme of the presentation today, and that is on the California Public Utilities Commission coordination update. And just as an intro to this topic, the project team is responding to the commission's June 6th public hearing direction, where the commission directed staff to return at a later date with more discussion on the CPUC authorities and regulations and horizontal clearances required by the CPUC. So the project team was able to connect multiple times with the CPUC staff through these past several months, and through these discussions with the CPUC, as well as through the project team's own parallel research efforts, the project team has developed a draft memorandum outlining the CPUC rail safety authorities and roles. This draft memorandum is included as attachment 3 to the staff report. And in the following slides, we'll discuss the CPUC authorities and roles, as well as outline how they relate to the zero emission passenger rail and trail project, and more broadly to the branch line. So to summarize the CPUC regulatory roles, the CPUC authority is derived from the California Constitution and from the California Public Utilities Code. Federal law also establishes a close relationship between the state, the states and the FRA. Under the California's Public Utilities Codes, the CPUC inspectors are federally certified to enforce both state and federal requirements. The CPUC's regulatory role spans the life of a rail project from planning through design and then into operations. CPUC regulatory authority over rail safety processes vary and include both design review and field verification. On the following slide, the different units of the CPUC's Rail Safety Division and their respective roles will be presented. And as a note, the project team and RTC staff are coordinating with the CPUC, and that coordination is ongoing and continues. The project team will continue to engage with the CPUC, and as the project development progresses, and continue to provide relevant updates to the commission. So on the slide are the different rail safety division and their roles. So under the CPUC, there's the rail safety division unit has four different, or rail safety, the division has four different units. They are the rail crossings and engineering branch, the railroad operations safety branch, the rail transit safety branch, and the rail safety risk management and engineering safety sections, which provide special assignments. All three of the top three units touch this project. Rail crossings, they deal mainly with the evaluating safety of the public rail crossings and review proposed construction of those crossings. The rail safety rail operations safety branch is federally certified inspectors of freight railroads and railroads that comply with both federal and state railroad safety regulations are under the purview of this branch. And then the third main branch is the authority of all of the CPUC over the rail transit agencies. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Mark McLaren, our project manager from the HDR consulting team, to give a little bit more detail on how those affect the project.
Great. Thanks, Riley. So a couple of conversations have taken place as we've come to you before, as well as we've been out meeting with stakeholders and in the public meetings about the role of the CPUC and the areas for which they have jurisdiction and how, in fact, they engage in a project as a project advances through the process. So we're going to talk on a couple of subjects here just very briefly to kind of help provide some clarification to that as it relates to the process and how this works. And starting with the discussion of the CPUC and clearances. So the Rail Operations Safety Branch, as Riley mentioned, is a group
that... Sorry to interrupt. Riley, your screen switched over.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Yes. Thank you.
That was a good interpretation of your screen that I was doing there, I think, Riley. So the Rail Operations Safety Branch provides safety certifications for new rail service and compliance of existing rail operations. And in that, one of the first areas where the RTC most recently has had engagement with them has to do with at-grade crossings under General Order 88B. Which includes design review and approval before construction. And so in your case, with the work that was done previously and is being done with the rail trail program, there are at-grade crossings that are affected by that project. And so your staff has gone through the process of working with CPUC to get General Order 88B. Yes.
I've been note they don't see our... slides, so I'm going to.
Oh, okay. They're showing
them there again. Okay. It looks like they still don't see it. Okay, I will try sharing a different way. Okay, it looks like that might have solved it. No. Apologies. Okay, it looks like that got it. Okay, let us know if we need to try again, but it looks like we got the screens up.
We good?
I think so, Mark.
Okay. All right. So just to backtrack just a little bit here. So the Rail Operations Safety Branch is one that provides safety certifications for new rail service and compliance with existing rail operations. And one of those key areas is enforcing the areas or the requirements for at-grade crossings under General Order 88B, which is one of the general orders that was in the previous table that Riley shared with you that shows some of the general orders and the branches of the CPUC that has oversight for those areas. And the General Order 88B requires both design review as well as approval of improvements or changes to at-grade crossings prior to construction. So this is a process that RTC staff has gone through as a part of the rail trail to gain approval from the CPUC for changes that will be affected at some at-grade crossings because of that project. The clearance requirements for railroad operations between the crossings, so once you get 100, 150 feet away from an intersection and an at-grade crossing and you're on a tangent of the railroad between intersections, that is actually a requirement that falls under a different general order, which is General Order 26D. The difference between these two is that the requirements of 26D set minimums, and those minimums are at the discretion of the inspectors that go out and review work once it's been completed in the field to acknowledge or to verify that the railroad is safe for operation. And so typically the CPUC recommends at this stage of early stages of design that design be done with an exceedance of the minimum requirement to ensure that once something's been constructed in the field, if there are any concerns about other obstructions or things that are within the right of way, that it has still been designed in a way that it is safe for operation.
The difference between the two divisions in this conversation is that under the General Order 88B at at-grade crossings, the CPUC is required to review the design and to approve those designs before they're constructed in the field. In the case of General Order 26D between the at-grade crossings, the CPUC is not required to review the design. And in fact, the final verification is actually done in the field after something has been constructed, at which time their inspectors go out and verify that the tolerances and the clearances that have been provided along the alignment of a railroad are in fact, in their determination, safe for operation. It's also important to understand that in meeting those clearances in the design and construction of a new railroad facility, ultimately, while the CPUC has the authority to go out and approve it, the responsibility for meeting those clearances in the design and construction of the railroad facility falls to the owner. So in the case of constructing a railroad between the at-grade crossings where the design has not been reviewed, has not been approved in advance by the CPUC for construction, they require or recommend, I should say, a risk-based design approach that includes exceeding the minimum requirements so that once it has been constructed, there are not concerns about those clearances when they get in the field, because that's ultimately at the point that they will make a decision. And if they make a decision in the field that something has been designed that they feel is not meeting their safety requirements under the intent of the general order, they can require the owner, at the owner's cost, go back and redesign or reconstruct elements of a project to ensure that they're going to be compliant under the general order before they provide the certification for the railroad to operate.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark. There's a really good... So providing this summary for our clearances and how the CPC roles and authorities relate to those as we do our project design. The last thing to touch on are CPC rail vehicle operations. And just to briefly summarize those, that's the third branch we mentioned earlier in the presentation. And the general practice is what is called 2G buffering safety requirements. For rail vehicles that interface with freight rail operations like we have on the branch line. In a few cases, the CPC offers waivers for passenger rail vehicles, and we can go into more depth on that if there's questions about that. But it is, it is available, it's uncommon, and in all those situations, the CPC requires additional safety measures to then meet their safety requirements. So that brings us into the next steps, which I'll briefly get into just where we're at, and then we'll wrap up. So on the screen is we're between milestone 2 and 3, and milestone 3 will be bringing to the commission and the public in the fall, and then wrapping up with milestone 4 at the end of the project. And that wraps us up to the end of the presentation. I will stop sharing, and we are available for your questions.